Welcome to the second instalment in our Debate at GO8 podcast series, which canvasses issues affecting the Group of Eight universities and, by extension, Australia's economy and our society. The Group of Eight comprises Australia's leading research-intensive universities, the universities of Melbourne, Sydney, Queensland, Western Australia, Adelaide, the Australian National University, Monash University, and UNSW Sydney. As a leader, the GO8 strives to influence the development and delivery of long-term sustainable national higher education and research policy. It also develops elite international alliances and research partnerships. Its chief executive is Vicky Thompson, and she's here today to discuss an issue that impacts on all our universities: the role and importance of international students. According to some estimates, the international student sector is worth between $30 and $40 billion to the Australian economy, and it's been hit hard by the pandemic. Well, Vicky Thompson, CEO of the Group of Eight Universities, let's put this issue of international students into some sort of context. Why are Australian universities so attractive to international students?
Well, I think it's that universities, that the international students are attracted to our universities, actually, the other way around, Ron. And, you know, it goes way back. It's 50, 60 years ago that we took our first international students into universities in Australia, and it was actually a government initiative.
That was a Colombo plan.
Yeah. And in fact, now we have the new Colombo plan where we're post-COVID, or at least pre-COVID, we were sending students into the region. So education is a global enterprise, and that has been the case now for several decades. And Australian universities have been very attractive to international students. We have a quality offering. We're very safe, you know, all of the things that parents look at when they're sending their kids overseas. We're competitive in terms of the market. And importantly, for the universities that I represent, we have a significant proportion of research students. And, you know, increasingly we're seeing greater numbers of research students coming to our universities because I think, as we've said previously, and I will continue to say, research is a global enterprise. So I think it's, yes, we are attractive to the students, and yes, we are attracted to international students for our education offerings here in Australia.
So how many international students are enrolled at Australian universities more generally?
Generally, if we look at the sector as a whole, so not just the Group of Eight, 1.4 million students in total, domestic and international, and around 420,000 of those in the higher education sector are international. For the Group of Eight universities, we have around 160,000 students who are international students from, I think, 160 countries are represented across our universities. So it's a significant proportion, and that proportion has grown quite considerably, actually, probably over the last decade.
I was going to ask you about the growth, because to put this into context, we want to sort of understand, I think the audience want to understand, you know, just how this has grown over time. You mentioned the Colombo plan, you know, 50, 60 mm-hmm. years ago, but in more recent times, it really seems to have grown significantly. Why has that been?
So it has grown, you're quite right. And in fact, in the 5 years leading up to COVID, so up to 2019, international student numbers doubled for our universities and grew by 77% for the whole sector. There's a couple of reasons for that. We're offering a great product. If we look at it in that context, we're offering a great education experience for our students in the region. And at the same time, students in our region, you know, those countries are building up, and there's a growing middle class, there's a growing level of affordability, and an understanding that an international education, and in this case, an Australian education, will benefit them. But there has also been, and we can't walk away from this, at the same time as we have increased our numbers of international students, the federal government has reduced their investment in universities. And so a little known fact, you know, we are public universities in Australia and the Group of Eight, but actually we receive about 30% of our income, excluding student fees, from the federal government.
Right.
So there's often been an argument about how public are you mm-hmm. When you say, you know, you think about a third of our revenue coming from the federal government. So at the same time as that revenue has declined over successive governments, we have increased our international students. And I think that is the thing that COVID has done. It has shone a light on that funding model for universities. It's not sustainable. And, you know, we are heading for a world of pain as universities because obviously we can't get students here at the moment.
But it really points to the fact that as the federal government has wound back the amount of funding to universities, you've had to go out and attract more international students to fund universities generally across the nation.
That's right. And importantly, in our case, for the Group of Eight, that university, that international student revenue has funded our research. And if you remember, you know, we do 70% of all university-based research in Australia across eight universities. And, you know, research is an expensive exercise, and that's research that is in the national interest. Mm. And so, you know, we are now in the process of having to rethink our business model, as many businesses are post-COVID. But that shouldn't take away from the incredible asset that we do have in our international student market. And so it's a tricky topic to discuss, to be honest with you, because we don't want our international students to be seen as cash cows. But unfortunately, that's where we're kind of going in the story at the moment, because we have lost a significant part of our revenue as a result of our closed borders policy, which we've supported. So there's not a sort of a discussion or an argument there that that's the result of COVID. But we do need a pathway to reopening and in terms of getting our international students back, not just for the revenue, but for the value they add to the broader economy, but also to our education offering.
Before we get into the ways in which you're rethinking this business model, I just want to really establish just how important it is to the universities more generally and to the nation more particularly. In the opener to this piece, I referred to a figure, you know, $30 to $40 billion in terms of the impact on the economy. Is that right?
It's absolutely right. And in fact, you know, depending on how the coal industry and the iron ore or the resources industry is going, we're usually the second or third largest export sector in the economy.
It's funny to think of it as an export sector because students
come here. It's a services industry. And it's an export sector.
Do you think the Australian community understand the sheer importance of that to the Australian economy?
No, not at all. And, you know, again, we probably haven't told that story as well as we could. But let's just take the Group of Eight picture. So for every three international students studying at one of our eight universities across the country, those students generate $1 million in economic impact into the community. So what that means is that's the rent they pay, that's the coffee they buy at the cafe, the shops they go to, the cinemas they go to, you know, the expenditure. That's separate to what they do in our universities. So you take that out of the economy, that's a significant, you know, impact on local economies. If you think of Victoria, in Victoria, international education is their largest export. You take that out of that economy, you're going to have a knock-on effect in hospitality, in tourism. A lot of the tourism impact or tourism that we have into Australia is actually families visiting their kids.
That's right. University.
And they'll come for the first visit and they'll just go and see that their kid. But then the next visit they'll come and they'll go out into the regions and they'll visit, you know, other areas. So international education does so much more into the economy than just, you know, what happens in our universities.
And as you've said, this grew over time. So no one could really foresee just how important it was going to become for not only tourism, but, you know, the Victorian economy, as you mentioned before. It's just kept in expanding in terms of its importance to the Australian economy.
It has. And I think what we're seeing now because of COVID, we're actually starting to shine a bit of a light on the impact of those students on our economy. You know, we now have workforce shortages because we don't have international students who often fill a lot of those jobs in the workforce, and or in that high skilled area. So we're talking not just about undergraduate students. For our universities, because we have such a strong research profile, we have a very significant proportion of students who are research students and PhDs, and they contribute to that skilled workforce.
Right.
So if I look at it like this, I think it's around about 80-85% of international students, when they've completed their studies, they go back to their countries and they contribute to, you know, into the workforce there. That remaining 15% help make up our skilled workforce here in Australia. We currently haven't got that. And where we're seeing shortages are in those areas that are really important to our economy. So the defence sector, really important in South Australia, for example. Now, you know, I recently had a conversation with the CEO of a major defence firm based here in an international firm, but with a very strong presence in South Australia. They just can't get engineers. And he was very blunt about that. If we don't actually address this issue of skilled migration, international students, we have to go offshore to bring in, to try and get that expertise. So not only are international students contributing to our universities, they're contributing to our economy, they're also contributing to our workforce. And we're not seeing that at the moment because of COVID. So it's a real problem.
Well, let's drill down a little later on the issue of the skills base, et cetera, and particularly in those high tech technology sort of areas. But they also play a valuable role in regional economies as well, don't they? Some of these people who get their particular skills as international students then go on and work in medical services out in the regions as well. Can you talk to that?
Yeah, that is a significant issue. And for anybody listening who lives in the regions, they'd be very probably aware that it's really hard to get doctors into the regions. And that is the one area actually in universities that is capped in terms of the numbers of medical students we can take in relation to our domestic students. And so what that means is that obviously we graduate our medical students, they go into the system, but we don't have enough to go into our country hospitals. And so discussions that we've had with the Rural Doctors Association, for example, have highlighted this as a real issue because we have a reliance on medically trained, internationally trained medical students to go into our hospitals in the regions. If we can't actually get them in, which we can't at the moment, we don't have the capacity to fill that. And I'll give you an example. Monash University, one of our group of eight universities, they will graduate 100 doctors this year for the Melbourne region, for the CBD. That isn't allowing any doctors to go into the regions. They're relying on internationally trained doctors, but we can't get them in at the moment. So you understand the conundrum, right, that we find ourselves in that particular area. And that would be true in many other cases. So I'll give you another example in the technology space. So think about technology which underpins our cybersecurity, you know, our IT sectors. They are saying that over the next 5 years, they're going to need 160,000 people into their workforce. We currently, across the group of eight, graduate 1,900 a year. So you don't need to be Einstein to work out that there's a huge gap. Where do we get those people from? We get them from overseas. We're not getting them at the moment. So, and we don't have, if we're not getting those international students, we haven't got enough to grow our own. That's the problem.
So it has a profound impact on Australia's sovereign capabilities in every possible way.
It certainly does. And you know, the Australian government is very strong on this, you know, building our own sovereign capability, and that is important. But kind of ironically, you can't do that without a strong international education market. We can't do it on our own.
So all much research is global, and if you want to get the benefits of global research, you've got to have international students
here. You have to have international researchers, international PhD students, and undergraduate students too, who will contribute to that. And, you know, that is part of our problem at the moment. And I think the other issue that we've got, Ron, is it's not just that our borders are closed, so that is creating some challenges, obviously, for us, significant challenge. And we think that we've got about 30,000 students stuck offshore still from the group of eight. But it's not that our borders are just closed. It's also the messaging that we're sending to our potential new students who will be looking to go, well, where should we go and study? Should we go to Canada, the US, New Zealand, the UK, or Australia? And we've always been very competitive amongst that group of universities. The messaging that is going out at the moment is that we're not open for business and we're perhaps not as welcoming as we should be. And that is resonating. And we're seeing that directly with students now choosing to go to the UK.
You also see this argument occasionally that, you know, the international students are taking placements for Australian students in our universities. Can you talk to
that? Nothing could be further from the truth. And that is something that, you know, if there's one message I can leave people who are listening to this, and I hear it myself, is that, well, that's okay. We don't want international students because they're taking the place of our domestic students. We wouldn't be able to fund the places of our domestic students if not for our international students.
And that's because Commonwealth money has declined over time.
So we get a certain proportion of funding. Everything is complex in the university funding environment, but we get a proportion of funding from the federal government to teach domestic students. Anything over and above that that we want to do in our universities, be it research or increase our numbers elsewhere, that revenue comes from somewhere else. And invariably, that revenue is coming from the revenue that we get from international students. So it is very much the case that thanks to a fantastic international education sector, we are able to teach more domestic students. Definitely not taking the place of our domestic students.
But it's an argument you hear out in the community. So how does the Group of Eight deal with that? Because that's a fundamental argument that has to be won if you want to get the Australian community on board with this notion of having more international students once COVID-19 lifts. Mm.
Well, I think we do it by talking about it as we are now. And I think, you know, I've said this previously, that sometimes it's been on us about not communicating the great things we do because we just get on and do it. The international education market's been similar. And we really, I mean, it is a little uncomfortable to talk about international education in monetary terms because there are so many other things we get from that. And so I guess COVID has shone that uncomfortable spotlight on that distorted funding model. And where we've not explained really well, I don't think, the impact that international education has on our economy, on our universities. So, you know, it's the old story of communicate to the public the benefits of international education in Australia. And that really shouldn't be a hard message, because if you think about what is Australia, what were we built on? We were built on multiculturalism. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the great strength of our nation. And so I would like to think that international education is just one really good positive part of that, and that we can actually communicate it in those terms to the broader community.
Well, we're recording this podcast in South Australia. So as a South Australian, I'd love to know how important international student numbers are to the South Australian economy. Can you talk to that?
Very important in South Australia, as it is in most states, but particularly so here, I think, because it is a smaller state. The other states have, you know, other industry sectors that they can rely on. But it's worth 4.2% of our gross state product. So it's about $4 billion to our economy. That is it's twice the amount of the revenue that we bring in from our wine industry. And so for good South Australians who know we have the best wine in Australia, mm-hmm. I think they'd find that quite a remarkable statistic, that our international education is worth twice as much as our wine industry in this state. And that is true in many other states. I've talked about Victoria. The largest export sector for Victoria is international education. So that is true, whether it's we're talking about agriculture, the resources sector, you know, any way you cut and slice it, this has been a big industry for our state economies.
Well, we've seen the impact of COVID-19 with the decline in student numbers, more generally international student numbers, and it begs the question maybe whether universities have been naive and a bit sloppy in their thinking about committing so much towards the international student sector that it comes back and rebounds on them big time. How do you respond to those sorts of criticisms?
Well, we've done nothing different than any other industry sector in the economy. And in fact, it was only a handful of years ago that we were being encouraged by our federal governments of both persuasions to pursue international engagement as we looked outward, because that is the nature of the island country that we are. We have to look outward in all of our trade relations. Name me a sector that hasn't done that, you know, that hasn't relied on strong trading partnerships with countries in our region, and one in particular, of course, China. So it's quite an interesting conundrum we find ourselves in now, that suddenly we should be looking elsewhere and we should be diversifying. And, you know, we're getting a lot of rhetoric from the federal government at the moment about focusing on the education of domestic students. We never didn't and we never wouldn't. That is always our priority. We are public universities here to educate our Australian students. But a fantastic byproduct of what we've managed to do is also educate tens of thousands of international students in the region. And that has to be a good thing.
So how do you deal with this issue then? You know, COVID-19 has bitten. We've seen a more insular approach and our borders are closed, et cetera. Are you concerned that in the long term we may become more and more insular and turn our heads away from the obvious need to have global research, a global approach when it comes to international students, more international students in the future? How do you deal with that issue?
Well, that would be to our detriment if that was the case. And I think that is a concern that, you know, not only the education sector is having. I talk regularly to other areas of the other you know, industry partners, including in, you know, the property sector, the mining sector, the banking, the finance, et cetera. And there is some concern about a little bit of scope creep in terms of how we're kind of responding in this COVID context, you know, to our international trading partners. And it would be a great, as I said, a great detriment to our education sector, but also other areas of the economy, if we were to actually close the doors. Now, I don't think that's what government wants to do, to be honest. And I understand, and we all do understand, why we've been in the situation we've been in. And Australia has dealt with COVID exceptionally well as a result. But we do need to look at what the transition strategy is, because the rest of the world is still out there and we've got a really important part to play in contributing to the economies of both, you know, in countries in our region, but also our own.
So what is the transition strategy? Let's get to that. I mean, you've been working on this in-house for some time. Can you give us some idea of what the thinking is into the future?
Well, I can tell you our thinking. and obviously the government's thinking is slightly different at this point in time. So look, we've always had the view that supported the government's view that the borders would remain closed until the health advice says it's okay to open up the borders. What we're saying to government, and let me say it's not just us saying this to government as universities, there is a coalition of the willing working quite closely together and talking to government, is that we need strong signalling and a transition strategy. That is important in terms of the messaging that goes out into our region and to our trading partners, that there is a plan. Because I think I mentioned that we have 30,000 students that we're aware of who are currently offshore at the moment. That's who we've got existing enrolled with us. We're wanting to build and have new students. If we suddenly opened the doors, you know, in 3 days' time, we can't just have plane loads of people arriving. We have to have the right strategies in place. Mm-hmm. And so a transition strategy which takes into account appropriate quarantining, appropriate vaccination, you know, one of the discussions I've been having is around whether we do it in sector bubbles. So, you know, we've got an opening with New Zealand and Australia, but what if we said, okay, we really need our skills base and we're very concerned about the IT sector. So let's work together with that sector in countries where we can open that bubble. So, you know, we've certainly, you know, I think in South Australia, they've actually imported or brought in fruit pickers from Vanuatu. I think that was in South Australia.
Yep.
Western Australia did something similar. So we're not saying, look, just open the borders and let everyone in. We have to have strategies in place and we have to ensure that the health of our people in Australia is not compromised. That's really important. And we don't walk away from that either. But it doesn't need to be either or. We think we can do an and. And so we're certainly looking to the federal government, because they control the borders, to give us some sign as to when the borders will open.
Thanks for your company today. If you'd like more information about the issues raised in this podcast or other related topics, please visit our website at go8.edu.au. And a quick reminder that you can always tune in to Debate at Go8 on Spotify, Google, Apple, or YouTube. Bye for now.